भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय श्रीमद् भागवतम थर्ड कैंटो चैप्टर 10 Divisions of the creation, fixed 7. Tad
Vilokya
Viyad
Vyapi
Pushkaram
Jad
Adhishthitam
Anena
Lokan
Prag
Leenan
Kalpita
Smiti
Achintaya
Tad vilakya viyad vyapi Pushkaram jad adhishthitam Anena lokan praglinan Kalpita smitya chintaya Tad vilakya viyad vyapi Pushkaram jad adhishthitam Anena lokan praglinan Kalpita smitya chintaya Tad vilakya viyad vyapi Pushkaram jad adhishthitam Anena lokan praglinan Kalpita smitya chintaya Tad vilakya, looking into that, viyad vyapi, extensively widespread, pushkaram, the lotus, yat, that which, adhishthitam, you were situated, anena, by this, lokan, all the planets, praklinan, previously merged in dissolution. Kalpita asmi. I shall create. Iti. Thus. Achintayat. He thought. Translation by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Thereafter he saw that the lotus on which he was situated was spread throughout the universe, and he contemplated how to create all the planets which were previously merged in that very same lotus. Please repeat after me. Thereafter he saw that the lotus on which he was situated
was spread throughout the universe.
And he contemplated
how to create all the planets
which were previously merged
in that very same lotus.
So purport by Srila Prabhupada. The seeds of all the planets in this universe were impregnated in the lotus on which Brahma was situated. All the planets were already generated by the Lord, and all the living entities were also born in Brahma. The material world and the living entities were all already generated in sibling forms by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Brahma was to disseminate the same siblings all over the universe. The real creation is therefore called Sarga, and later on, the manifestation by Brahma is called Visarga. So, tad vilokya viyad vyapi pushkaram jad adhishthitam anena lokan praglinan kalpitashmitta chintayat. Thereafter he saw that the lotus on which he was situated was spread throughout the universe, and he contemplated how to create all the planets which were previously merged in that very same lotus. So the creation and secondary creation is being described here, Sarga and then Visarga. In the purport, Prabhupada pointed out the real creation that came from Mahavishnu is the Sarga aspect, and then its manifestation through Brahma is the Visarga. So in this way, very scientifically, it is being explained about creation. Actually, it is not a matter of imagination. How something is created, we cannot imagine. If we do not know, then we should admit we do not know. But not to know and claim to know is cheating. And unfortunately, in today's world, in the name of knowledge, in the name of scientific understanding, all this cheating is going on. They don't have any understanding. Like, an example can be given. Like, say, some people went into a safari in an African jungle. He went driving a car. You get cars that can actually make its way through the forest. Very powerful cars. And now if that car breaks down in the middle of the forest, and those who are driving, they just made some arrangement to leave the place. They called up, a helicopter came and rescued them. Now, if some jungle people see the car, and if they start to speculate, they never have seen a car before. They have never seen a car before. They are just living in the deep, deep jungle of Africa. They are the neighbors of the gorillas. And so if they come across this car, and if they start speculating, what will be the extent of the speculation? The speculation will be relative only to their knowledge. Whatever they know, in the light of that, they will be speculating. Now, by speculating, will they ever be able to find out what is this car, how the car was manufactured? Now the scientists endeavor to understand the creation through their speculation, whether it's Big Bang theory or primordial soup theory or whatever. Will they ever be able to understand the mystery of creation, the secret of creation? Now consider, then somebody now goes to bring the car back. Right? So they go there, repair the car, and they see that the people there are seeing him repairing, and then they ask, can you please tell me what is this? Then he says, what is this? Then they ask him, well, where was it made? He tells, well, it was made in Germany by Mercedes-Benz with a special order. And then they ask, can you please tell me, can you please tell us how it operates? Then he can explain how it operates. Now, what is the intelligent thing to do? To speculate and think that this was made in such a way, it fell from the sky. The speculation can go on endlessly. They can say that all the clouds assembled together, and just as raindrops, this card dropped from the sky. And they can keep on speculating, but they'll never be able to understand. But if they listen to the person who knows about it, then they immediately become situated in knowledge. So that is the way to understand. Like I remember long time ago, I saw one movie. And this movie was actually showing, it was made by a very well-known director who was famous for his revolutionary thoughts and anti-materialistic culture. And the purpose of the movie was to show how materialistic advancement, scientific advancement, has destroyed everything, or destroying everything. Actually, it shows that the first scene is a plane is moving. And its shadow is falling on the ground. And we see that some children are running after that shadow, because they've never seen anything like that in an Indian village. They've never seen anything like that. And so they're just running, and then they're also seeing the plane, and then you see the whole village is practically looking at it. And then the village people got together at night. They usually get together. But when they used to get together, what they used to do? They used to chant Hare Krishna. They used to sing the glory of the Supreme Personality of God. But that night, what happened? The whole discussion was based on this, what that amazing sight that they saw. And they started to speak about it. Some were thinking that this is some demon who has come flying. Fortunately, he didn't land in our village, otherwise he would have burnt everything out. Some saying, no, this is actually Garuda. And Vishnu was riding on it. Didn't you see Vishnu was sitting on top? And in this way, people just keep on speculating. And like, this is how this modern culture is destroying everything. When we lived in nature, we are much happier. Whether it's in the jungle of Africa, or whether it's in the jungle of India, or village in India, or village in Africa, or even village in America or Europe, people are much happier. They're much happier because they lived in nature. And living in nature, they depended upon the Lord. They knew that everything is due to the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It's due to the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Everywhere that consciousness was there, to a greater or lesser extent, everybody believed in God. And they worshipped God in some way or other. They used to, I remember when I was young, there was a very popular Muslim folk song. And the folk song was, is praying to Allah, give us the cloud, give us the rain, give us... So it's there just praying to the Lord, give us this, give us that. To whom? And who are they praying to? Whether we call him Allah, or whether we call him Jehovah, or whether we call him Krishna. But people had that understanding, that we are depending upon his mercy. He is the one who is giving us rain. He is the one, because his mercy there is food grains. It rains, and because of rain there is food grains. And what to speak of the seeds? There is mercy. In the seed, the plant is there. But it needs some condition to germinate. In this way, there was life was simple, and people are happy just depending upon the Lord. They knew that it is by the mercy of the Lord that they are getting everything. The understanding was very clear. But when the civilization started, what happened? Mechanization. This is the meaning of the Iron Age, actually. Iron Age means the age of industry, industrial development. And industrial development is going to destroy the spiritual culture. Iron Age. And the purpose of this age is to destroy everything. The other day I was talking to Ganganar, and we have these two bulls here. They are just becoming a menace, actually. They are tied down here. They can't let them out because they are becoming so wild that they may even kill somebody. And why? I was thinking, why can't we use the bulls? We have a piece of land, we can use the bulls and oxen to till the land. But you can't do that, because it's not going to be practical. Why? Because we can just get a tractor. And in one day the job will be done. What will take the bulls? 30 days to do. And plus we have to have somebody to work the bulls. And a trained person. So it's difficult to get a trained person. It's not only the bull, we have to get the person also. And the person who would have been happy just working the bulls, now they are out in the cities working in a factory, because there he is getting more money. They don't realize that maybe in village he was earning 100 rupees. But with 100 rupees he could maintain his family. But now in the village he is getting 5,000 rupees and still he can't maintain his family. They are not seeing the end. They are simply concerned about the means. I am getting 5,000 rupees living in Bombay in a shanty, in a shack. And working 20 hours a day. Working like a bull is better, a mad dog. Not working like a bull, they're working like a mad dog. Being kicked left, right and center. And the 4 hours that they'll have left, and the money, that 5,000 rupees they're earning, out of that 5,000, 6,000 actually goes for that 1 hour that he goes out to drink liquor. So when he comes home, he doesn't have any money. Rather, he borrowed 1,000 rupees. His wife and children also living in a shanty. They're going hungry. They're starving because there's no money. He went and spent all the money in drinking alcohol. But is this civilization? Is this progress? That is what we have to think very, very seriously. Is this progress? Whether this is progress? Now, people all over the world have been illusioned to think that this is the real progress. And in course of their progress, what they have done? They have rejected God. There is no God. Why do you need rain? The bread is coming from the factory. Prabhupada often used to give that example. In Russia, in the communist countries, when they were preaching to the people after the war, they would go and tell people that you are praying to God to give your daily bread. Just pray to God. Did He give you bread? Did you get any bread? No, we didn't get any bread. Then they opened their truck. Now come, pray to us. And they gave them. Who gave you the brain?
You gave us the brain.
But they are so stupid, they are so much in ignorance, that they don't understand that they couldn't make the bread without the grains. Where did the grains come from? That they didn't have the... Naturally, they are ignorant people. And in this way, they turn them into atheists. Why worship God? What did you get from God? But actually, in order to understand God, one has to be intelligent enough. Intelligent enough means, what is intelligence actually? Intelligence is something that makes us see beyond our immediate perception. That is what is intelligence. The immediate perception is in some way. But when you go beyond that, like for example, if those people thought that, where did the bread come from actually? Did they make them in their factory? Where did the grains, how did they make the bread? The grains, the flour, wheat. Where did the wheat come from? It came from the field. How did it grow? From the seeds, and from rain, and from such wonderful arrangement. Who made that arrangement? Immediately we get the answer. So, the proper intelligence is to see things as they are. To see things as they are, not it as it appears to be. And the most intelligent consideration actually is to be exposed to a proper teacher. The teacher tells us, as we gave the example, in the middle of the jungle, the car broke down. Somebody came and explained what that is, and where it was manufactured, what's its purpose, how it functions. Then they become situated in knowledge. Oh, this is how it works. So similarly, when it comes to the bigger aspect, you know, nature, then we have to understand that somebody made this wonderful arrangement. Now who is that somebody? Sometimes when we used to give such example to people. we do the Harinam and we gather people. When they can't get together, then one of us used to speak. And I used to ask people, that watch that you're wearing, did somebody make it? The glasses that you're wearing, somebody make it? The shirts that you're wearing, did somebody make it? This building, did somebody make it? These vehicles, these cars, did somebody make it? Did somebody make this planet? Now a small thing like a pair of glasses, a watch, we conclude very, very openly that somebody must have made it. But when it comes to the big creation, they say no, nobody made it. It's an accident. Now, it's a common sense thing. Like, if I say that this pair of glasses was made by accident, will anybody here accept that point? Nobody. If I say that this came as an accident, will anybody accept it? But when we see the beautiful nature, the whole planet, maintaining such a beautiful order, every day the sun is coming up at a specific time. Never, ever there is a flaw in that arrangement. The seasons change. And with this change of seasons, the nature also changes. In autumn the leaves fall, in winter they're completely bare. Then everything is covered with snow, not here, but in the west. Everything is covered with snow. And then everybody knows this will stay like that maximum until March. In April, the sun will come up and the sun will become hot and the water will start to melt. And then some flowers will come just from nowhere. There are some flowers like pansies, tulips. They just automatically they come up. They have been hiding under the... They're hibernating. Or not hibernating, they're actually... Yeah, hibernating. They're sleeping. But as soon as the water melts, immediately they come out. The leaves come out and then the beautiful flowers come out. And you can see that the trees that were bare all this while, all of a sudden new leaves come in them. And then after a while the trees become filled with flowers. And then those flowers mature, the petals drop and the fruits come out of them. Now it's all accident. It takes a big fool to speak like that, actually. Either a big fool or a big cheater. A bluff. And this is how these people are misleading. And eventually what is the reality actually? These people are actually the agents of Kali. Because Kali is spreading his influence by removing Krishna. Kali's business is to remove Krishna, remove the concept of God, and establish atheism. Because without atheism, Kali cannot spread his influence. So in this way, Kali is actually spreading his influence, and the result is? Result is quarrel, the result is fight, war, and destruction. Everywhere. That's what is happening. That's what Kali's agenda. Kalishcha Kalaha Priya. Kali is very fond of quarrel. Because Kali is quarrel personified. And how does quarrel begin? Quarrel actually begins with the influence of Kali. Now it's interesting to note, who is the father and mother? Kali is actually a person. And who is the father and mother of Kali? Anger and envy. Anger and envy are Kali's father and mother. And the result is quarrel. Why everywhere people are quarreling? What is the cause of quarrel? Anger and envy. First envy and then anger. Now if we want to be properly situated in Krishna consciousness, what's the first thing that we should try to get rid of? Quarrel. Because it is through quarrel that Kali will spread his influence. Therefore, devotees should avoid all kinds of, all the possibilities of quarrel and fight. Devotees should not fight. If devotees fight, then what will happen? Then that would mean that we are actually allowing Kali to enter. And when Kali enters, Krishna leaves. So even though, again, we go back to that point, intelligence is to see things beyond our immediate perception. Immediate perception, we may not recognize that. When you fight, we think that I am right. Everybody thinks he is right. In a fight, you'll never find both the fighting parties, anyone of them to, either one of them to admit that it's his fault. Both are saying, I am right. Now, if both are right, is it possible for both to be right? Either one is right, one is wrong, or both are wrong. In most cases, both are wrong. Because they are wrong, because they are fighting. That's the wrong. That's the mistake. So if you want to be right, don't fight. Even if he is wrong, don't fight. Because if you allow this fight to continue, then what will happen? Kali will say, yes, fine, you paved my road. You paved the road for me. You paved the road for me. So Kali will enter. And how Kali enters, there is an expression, enter like a needle and come out like a plough. Kali enters like a needle. And he doesn't come out like a plough. He comes out like a nuclear warhead. So that is how Kali. And Prabhupada gave the example, like what happened to Gauriamath. It was such a successful spiritual institution established by Śrīla Bhaktisiddhānta Saraswati Thakur. But 3 days after Śrīla Bhaktisiddhānta Saraswati Thakur's, within 3 days of Bhaktisiddhānta Saraswati Thakur's disappearance, they started to fight. And the fight is still going on. The court cases are still going on. The generations, one or two generations have gone by, but they are still fighting. So that is what it is. I allow the fight and there is no end to it. Because Kali will not stop until he completely destroyed Krishna consciousness. Therefore Prabhupada warned us, no matter whatever happens, don't fight, don't go to court. Don't go to court. Because court is not the place of dharma. Court is actually the place of Kali. In this age, Kali is entering in the name of dharma. In court you don't get justice. Bhagavatam is saying that, the 12th canto, the influence of Kali. In the court we'll never get justice in the age of Kali. Because it is a place of falsity, it's a place of lie. The bigger big lawyer means the bigger liar. And anyway, it's, the point is that we have to understand what is what and act accordingly. So avoid fight, avoid quarrels, because quarrel means you are becoming an agent of Kali. Then you are not representing Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Then you are representing Mr. Kali. So this is how this age is going to become very, very dangerous. But only solution to this age, all the problems of this age, is Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy. Take shelter of Mahaprabhu's mercy. And how do we become qualified to receive Mahaprabhu's mercy? Srinadopi shuni chena tarurupi shahishnuna. Shahishnuna. Become tolerant. Even if you are right and the other party is wrong. Even if the whole world is wrong, just tolerate. Just tolerate. Because we have nothing to gain in this world. What we are actually aspiring for is Krishna's mercy. It doesn't matter how the world is looking at us. What really matters is how Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is looking at us. And when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu sees that, yes, we have become more tolerant. We have become tolerant. We have become humble. Then Mahaprabhu will be pleased. He'll say, yes. Yes, here is my man. Here is my man. I'll use him in fulfilling my mission. That is how one actually becomes qualified. But on the other hand, if one begins to fight, no end to it. Then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu will say, how unfortunate. My pure devotee, Bhaktivedanta Swami, made such wonderful arrangements, brought them so close to me. And look, they are becoming victimized by the influence of Kali. They are fighting. I asked them, I requested them to become more humble than a blade of grass. But what they have become, instead of becoming more humble than a blade of grass, they are becoming more arrogant than the Mount Everest. We wanted them to become more humble than a blade of grass, and look at their attitude. Their attitude is bigger than the Mount Everest. I asked them to become tolerant, and they become so intolerant. They can't just accept a small little insult. Rather, they are so insulting to others. Becoming more tolerant, they have become so insulting. And the result is quarrel. And as a result of the quarrel, they are making the way for Kali to enter. So, that's why it's so important that we accept the knowledge and understanding from Srila Prabhupada's teachings and mold our lives accordingly. To be a devotee means to sincerely accept the teachings of Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada has given us everything in his books. Now let's just practice it. And the result will be there. Maybe in the eyes of the world we will not be very successful, we will not be considered to be very great. But in the eyes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we will become somebody. He will notice us. And that's what really matters. When he recognizes us, then our life is successful. But when he rejects us, then our life is doomed. Hare Krishna, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Gaur Premanande. Yes?
First question from Guru Maharaja Prabhu. They say the result of their technology is easy to see. So what is the result of your religious philosophy? How are you practically benefiting humanity?
The result of their achievement is perceivable. Yes, and what we are seeing right now, financial meltdown. What we are seeing, credit crunch. And that's just the beginning. Next, you know what we'll see? Massive unemployment. And then what will happen? Starvation. Death. That is what we'll be seeing very soon. But you take shelter of Krishna, then what will happen? You will conquer death. You will, when you are alive, you'll enjoy your life. And at the time of death, you'll see Krishna has come to take you back. Now, which one is a better proposal? To become a victim of credit crunch and financial meltdown, or become rescued by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy? Yes, you have created so many wonderful things. Fine. But if there is no food to eat, will you be able to eat those nuts and bolts that they are manufacturing in their factories? Will they be able to, so far has the scientist, single scientist, with all their industrial development and scientific development, have been able to produce a single grain of rice? So if there is shortage of food, say if there is no rain, it's happening all over the world. There's scarcity of water. There's scarcity of rain. And as a result of that, there won't be any food grains. And when there is no food grains, then what will one eat? Now, will they be able to eat their computers and color TV? They can give it a try and see how it tastes. Thank you, Guru Gauranga, for this very nice question. Yes, Shampiari.
Guru Maharaj, can you explain what is actually a fight?
Actually, fight means fight. It starts off with the tongue. First, it actually enters in your mind. That total rejection. I can't stand that person. That's how it begins. Then it comes out in the tip of the tongue. You are this, you are that. And the other person also then responds. You are this, you are that. Like a ping pong game. Right? One person hits, the other person returns. Then the first outcome of that is called tongue lashing. Right? And then fist gets involved. And it goes on. One party gives one stroke, the other party returns with a bigger strength. Then it gets into sticks. From hand it starts. Maybe first is holding on to each other's hair and start pulling. And then the other person just slaps on the face. And then the other person replies by giving a punch. Then the other person picks up a stick. The other person picks up a knife. Then the other person picks up a sword. Then the other person picks up a spear. Then other person picks up a gun. Then he brings a machine gun. The other brings a cannon. And then the other person brings a rocket. Then it goes to hydrogen bombs. Right? And it goes on. Will it end? So that's why don't fight. Because if you allow Mr. Kali to enter, Kali will not stop until he is completely destroyed. That's his business. Yes, Jennifer.
You mentioned about living in nature, how we used to live in nature. There's a description of Vedic cities. I'm wondering the difference between Vedic cities and modern day cities.
You see, when it comes to, when it comes to organizing, getting things, say the king, they couldn't afford to live in a village. They had to have people. They had to have facilities. They had to have fort, right? And fortresses. And so this is how they had to make the arrangement. But they depend, for some purpose, they would build a city. They would live in a city. But the dependence was there upon the nature. The Kshatriyas would live in a city. Some Vaishyas will live in a city. But majority of the Vaishyas will be cultivating land, taking care of cows. So they were in the villages. Brahmanas, they would not even live in a village. They would just go to a quiet place away from that and set up their ashram on the bank of a river. And Sudras, whoever he is engaged by, he would live with them. So this is how the society was dependent upon nature. And whatever involvement of organizing the nature was, that was for the benefit of the people. And that's the difference. But now what is happening? People are leaving villages and going to the cities. Not to become a Kshatriya, not to become a Vaishya, most of them. To become a Sudra. They're going to a city to get some job. And they're thinking that the ultimate success of one's existence is to go to the city and make money and have all this material enjoyment. Material enjoyment means illicit sex, meat eating, gambling, and intoxication. People in villages didn't need intoxication. But people in the cities can't live without intoxication. All those people. And also what is happening, that because they are living in an artificial atmosphere, they can't accept the supremacy or existence of God. You know, when one was in the nature, then one would see how, you know, nature is actually providing everything. And behind that nature there is God. They're depending upon nature, but you know, nature also has two sides. One is a favorable side and the other is unfavorable side. Nature is not providing, the God who is providing. When they prayed, as I was pointing out, they were not praying, nature give us water, nature give us rain. They are praying to God, Allah, to give rain. So this way, when one lives in nature, also another thing, when you are living in nature, you see the cows, you see the other animals, and you see how they are living entities, how they have emotions, how they have feelings. Then you won't be able to kill them. But because they are living in an artificial atmosphere, you know, the meat is coming to them not in the form of a cow. The meat is coming to them from the supermarket in a very nicely packed, you know, presentation. Like, there were some statistics some years ago, and it came out with an incredibly shocking outcome, that something like 60 or 70% of the children didn't know that where the food came from. They thought that food comes from the supermarket. They don't know whether the food grows, how food grows. Or they don't even know that the meat is, you know, killing of the animals. So that's how ignorant people have become. So in that society, how can you expect that there will be God conscious? Therefore, in order to be properly situated, we have to depend upon nature. We have to depend upon Krishna. We have to live in nature to depend upon Krishna.
There's a pondering. Sometimes devotees are very tolerant about their own situation. But when we look in, we find that there may be a little bit of injustice. They've been treated badly, etc. How are we to react from that stance when we see others being mistreated?
Can you elaborate?
Well, we can have a devotee who is being blasphemed, mistreated, misjudged, etc. For want of the other group wanting to elevate themselves. But the devotee is staying humble. He's not saying anything. And he's just taking the humble position and letting whatever situation transpire. And if we recognize that, then how are we to act?
Be sympathetic towards him. And when he is being unjustly treated, at least you be nice to them and give him the support. Give him the understanding. Please don't worry about that. It's Krishna's test. And it has happened. ISKCON has gone through a phase when the leaders had been very unfair, and some of the leaders were very unfair and unjust, which caused many devotees to leave the movement. But those who remained, it seemed that for their sake, very soon those individuals were removed from ISKCON. They are not there anymore. Right? So just be tolerant. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, be tolerant. If you are tolerant, then Mahaprabhu will take action. You may not take action. You don't take action. Let Chaitanya Mahaprabhu act. And the thing is that when Mahaprabhu acts, you see, we have an option. When we make a mistake and we correct ourselves, it may be painful, but it's not that painful. But when we don't correct our mistakes, we carry on thinking that, you know, that is how I'm going to go on forever. Then one day what happens? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu takes action. And when he takes action, it's very, very, very heavy. It's very heavy.
And if you're a part of that authority, that in a way is being unjust, and they're not listening to your counsel, then what do you do?
Tolerate. You tolerate, like, and remind them, look, I'm coming to you as your well-wisher. And please listen. If you don't, and if Chaitanya Mahaprabhu takes action, if Krishna takes action, it's going to be very, very serious. Yeah, when Harinam spreads, when Sankirtan movement spreads all over the world like that, or wherever it spreads, Kali will run from there. And ultimately when it spreads all over the world, then Kali won't have any place to go to. And Kali cannot tolerate the chanting of the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. Kali runs from there. So Kali will cover his ears and start screaming, where shall I go, where shall I go? Then he'll have to run to some mountain caves or in the depth of the forest or maybe under the ocean. He'll be hiding. Yes, Swami?
Maharaj, in today's world, everyone is going to fight. Should we get our financial loss or mental loss to resist ourselves?
Well, what to do? Like, you know, the point is better to avoid fight. Like, say, you thinking that financial loss, and then you go to court, right, to get justice, and you indulge, you get into an even greater loss, right? Right. Therefore, you know, try to make some compromise out of court. Even the lawyers will give you that advice. Why not settle it out of court?
What about my business?
No, I'm talking about the good lawyers. No, it happened. Like in America, we are fighting a big case, you know, very big case. And the lawyers were advising us, why don't you settle it out of court? And we did that. We settled it out of court. Some lawyers are good. And the judges, no, actually the judge gave them counsel. Why not settle it out of court? In America, the lawyers are the richest. To be a lawyer is the biggest, most lucrative profession. A lawyer. They have their, many lawyers have their private jets. They are billions of dollars every year. Yes.
Two more questions. First from Pema Mundari Mataji, Mumbai. If you try to help someone spiritually by chastising since they are not following the rules and regulations properly, then is that also fighting?
You give an advice, but don't get into fight. You don't say, why aren't you following the rules and regulations? And the other person says, and who are you to tell me? Then you say, who are you to tell me? The point is, try to avoid that kind of situation. Thank you, Prema.
Next question from Chanki. I heard that Srila Prabhupada said that once you go back to Godhead, back to Krishna, you can still fall down again. But in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that once you go home to Him, you never return. Can you please explain?
Yes, Champi, Prabhupada may have said that. I don't remember where you got it from. But Prabhupada also pointed out when somebody asked, when somebody goes back to Godhead, then can he again fall down? Prabhupada said no. The reason Prabhupada gave is once bitten, twice shy. Like once you have seen how terrible this material nature is and how difficult it is to go back to Krishna, then would you like to come back to this material nature again? No. So generally, one doesn't fall down from going back to Krishna. Actually, Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur in his Madhurya Kadambini has explained that yes, one can fall down up to the point of bhava. Like Ado Shraddha Tata Sadhu Sangha, Anarthani Vritti Bhajana Kriya, Nishtha Ruchi Ashakti Bhava. So even from that stage, one can fall down. From bhava point platform, one can fall down. Prabhupada gives the example. I mean, Prabhupada mentioned that in relation to Bharat Maharaja's apparent fall down. But Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur is pointing out that from the point of prema, one cannot fall down. When one received Krishna prema, then from that platform, one doesn't fall down. Now to go back to Godhead, one has to have prema. From that point, one doesn't fall down. But again, in Brihad Bhagavatamritam, it has been pointed out that although Gop Kumar went all the way up to Vaikuntha, all the way up to Dwarka, he came down to the earth planet. But that was not a fall down. He deliberately came down being instructed by his spiritual master, Narad Muni. And he came down to the earth planet, to Vrindavan, to perform Sankirtan, to go back to Golok Vrindavan. So that sometimes from spiritual sky somebody may come down to the earth planet, but that is not a fall down. That is in order to become qualified to enter into Vrindavan. And sometimes Krishna may say, send somebody, just as He comes Himself, He may send His pure devotee to come. But that is not, He doesn't become conditioned. He always remains liberated. Does it answer your question, Champi? Okay.
Next question from Sudhir Chaturvedi. fighting may be the only option sometimes for establishing dharma, just like in case of Arjuna. So, is it correct to say that the fighting, when authorized by spiritual authority, is okay to do?
In the age of Kali, it has been advised not to fight, even in order to establish dharma. In other ages, yes. Krishna himself came and killed the demons to establish dharma. But in the age of Kali, he didn't do that. Because in the age of Kali, the reality is that if you allow fight, there won't be any end to it. There'll be total destruction. Therefore, Mahaprabhu's advice is just tolerate. Don't fight. Just tolerate, because then Krishna will take action. Krishna can take action in so many ways. Like Krishna can either transform the person's heart, like he did in many cases when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came. Many Muslims who were extremely opposed to Krishna consciousness in Vedic culture, they became favorable to devotees. When Mahaprabhu was coming from Orissa to Bengal, there was a Muslim king in between. After the Orissa border, it was a Muslim territory. And King Prataparudra and others were very worried. How will Chaitanya Mahaprabhu travel through the Muslim territory? Really, they were very worried. They were very afraid. But then what happened? The Muslim Nawab's heart was transformed and he gave a boat himself to take Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, bring him to Bengal. So how did it happen? Krishna can transform. He is situated in everyone's heart. He can transform even a demon in this age into a devotee. And that's why Chaitanya Mahaprabhu didn't take any weapon. Rather, he will transform their hearts with Krishna. Thank you. Yes?
I have two questions.
Yeah.
One is that loving Krishna is Krishna Prince, or if one loves Krishna, that is Krishna Prince, or what is Krishna Prince?
What is love?
Prince.
Then?
And one can go to direct Krishna Prince without knowing that.
No. Because if you still have anartha, that means you haven't understood Krishna. Anartha means being situated in your false identity. So only when the anarthas are eradicated, then one can be situated in pure spiritual identity. And that pure spiritual identity will make you develop your love for Krishna. So you can't have anartha in one hand and have Krishna prema at the same time. That will be sentimental. That's not prema, that's sentiment. So in order to achieve Krishna prema, one has to go through this period. Anartha nibriti. After, what is anartha? It's not that right after anartha nibriti you get prem. After anartha nibriti comes nishtha. Then you become fixed up. When you become fixed up, then you get the taste. When you get the taste, then you get the attachment. When you get the attachment, that develops into experiencing the transcendental emotion, bhava. And then from transcendental emotion, those transcendental emotions will become more mature in prem, in love. Right? It's a gradual process. But when you chant Hare Krishna, then everything will not. You just chant Hare Krishna, everything will take care. Will be taken care of. You may not systematically experience that you are going through the phases, but you will go through the phases and get the prem. By that time, when you get the prem, what will happen? Anartha, nipritti, nishtha, ruchi, everything will be surpassed. All those regions have been surpassed. Right? Therefore, chant Hare Krishna. Alright? Take shelter of the Holy Name. Thank you all very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Gaur Premanande.